Yajo sat on a wall again, drumming her heels against the stone. This time it was a short retaining wall high up on the town's ancient acropolis, looking out over the strip of city lights running along the darkness of the Mediterranean. Above her left shoulder, illuminated by floodlights at the base, rose the shiny red granite obelisk misnamed Pompey's Pillar. Off to her right, a small sphinx lay pensive on its pedestal. Anya paced down slope of her this time, without great energy but still driven. They'd had dinner at a couscous restaurant, though even with ample doses of hot sauce, it tasted like wood chips to Anya. Yaja had told Anya some of her story, proudly claiming descent from Mozart, a fact which struck Anya as implausible. Yaja had shown signs of extraordinary gifts at a young age. Tests demonstrated that she had an astonishing facility for languages, as well as a talent for mathematics. She learned to read at the age of 3 and continued to pursue literature voraciously throughout her youth. As Anya had, she quickly fell in love with the intrigue, adventure, and romance of history, leading to a near obsession with ancient languages. Oddly, she chose not to study specific languages at school. Instead, she focused on teaching them to herself. Her academic background focused on linguistics and cryptology, both of which were subjects that bettered her ability to decipher the tantalizing fragments of unknown languages. After Yaja had finished her story, they had drifted up the hill together. They had already checked out the hotel where they had spent the previous night and locked their baggage, except for the scrolls, in lockers at the train station. Tonight, they would check into a new hotel as late as possible. Since hostelries had to report all foreign guests to the police, the later the pair showed their passports, the more likely the hotel staff was to wait until morning to pass the information along to officials. While there was always the danger of their pursuers bribing the Alexandrian police for information, Anya and Yaja could at least count on the safety provided by their inefficiency.
So, what do we do now?
We have to find a way to get whoever is hunting us off our backs.
How can we do that?
Well, we could give them what they want.
Sure. And then they could kill us anyway to keep us quiet.
That's true.
What? You aren't going to accuse me of conspiracy theories?
As you pointed out, somebody really is conspiring against us. But what if we were to negate the value of what you're carrying?
How?
Release the information the scrolls contain. If whoever's after us is willing to do anything to keep the information secret, then it stands to reason that if we go public, they'll have no more incentive to kill us. Doesn't it?
What if they still want to kill us for revenge?
It's possible. But continuing a vendetta against a couple of young women, who have incidentally become world-famous figures, might not make a whole lot of sense when vast profit or power is no longer at stake. Whoever ordered the hit on your dig team probably has powerful rivals who aren't any more scrupulous than he is. Wasting resources closing the barn door after the horse is gone might be all the pretext such rivals need to make a move against him.
Twisted. I like the way you think.
Anya did not particularly care for the gleam she saw in Yaja's eyes, in part because she wasn't so sure it wasn't shining from her own.
Can you think of anything more satisfying than revealing the secret they want so very badly to keep?
The decision to move to Herculaneum in Italy was one of the first things that Anya and Yaja had been in full agreement about. A major archaeological dig site, it would have the equipment needed to read what was on the scrolls. Flight schedules had forced them to cool their heels in Alexandria for another day before departure. They stuck with their plan to stay out in public as late as possible, then dive undercover in a new hotel. Anya had used this time to get to know her rambunctious charge better. She had also attempted to reach Rue, but learned that he was nowhere to be found, as was often the case when she needed his advice. Anya had fretted herself half sick about the possibility she and the girl would be taken aside when they finally faced the flight security check at the airport. In the current environment of unquestioning compliance with supposed security measures, no one would dare to comment at the sight of 2 foreign women being led to a discreet office in the back. But if they were never seen again, it was unlikely anyone would be the wiser. Luckily, they had boarded their flight and departed for Italy without incident. Barely 12 hours later, they were settled, watching the seagulls wheel over the Bay of Naples in the bright blue morning sky. Anya felt the weight of time and mortality as she and Yaja walked with their attentive guides through the ruins of Herculaneum. The two women were being escorted through a ghost town of pallid stone by several researchers from Brigham Young University and a few employees of the small Herculaneum Museum, which, like the site as a whole, was closed to the public at the moment. Anya and Yaja were getting a personal tour as a professional courtesy. The researchers seemed excited to meet Anya, a genuine television celebrity from their field, and one, moreover, who might somehow be able to bring the mana of airtime or even coveted television network dollars to their project. But it was Yaja they actually seemed to regard with awe. It was as if a rising baseball superstar was visiting a minor league team's locker room. Their main guide was a fresh-faced Mormon named Tom Ross.
"We're still waiting to receive permission to continue our work from the Italian government. Further excavation has been held up until the ministry decides whether to give priority to a conservation strategy first. Of course, there are legitimate conservation issues at stake here, but the history that we have the opportunity to discover encourages us to keep on keeping on. It has been frustrating, though. The ministry's been promising to get us word any time now since about February."
They strolled through a broad courtyard or smallish plaza between the stone faces of excavated buildings, some two stories tall. A palm tree waved badly weathered fronds, half of them dead and brown in the insistent breeze. The empty doorways and windows looked like the eyes of skulls, and the sense of desolation was palpable, despite the fact the crew walked through what amounted to a very vital ancient city. Maybe it was the sudden and horrid fashion in which so many lives had been snuffed at once by one of Mother Nature's better-known disasters. Or perhaps it was the brooding presence of the mountain itself, the two-humped saddle shape, taller Vesuvius, separated from ancient Somma by the Valley of the Giant. The old killer lay dormant now, although it had smoldered as recently as a few decades before.
"What about equipment to read the scrolls? I understood you were trying to obtain the scanners that can read the carbonized scrolls from the Villa of the Papyri."
"You're referring to the multispectral imaging and CT scans? Unfortunately, this hasn't come through yet. We have an American patron bankrolling much of this operation. He's real generous, but his generosity sort of hits pause when it comes to shelling out millions of dollars for an undertaking that might take years before it can actually get started, if ever."
Anya's lips peeled back from her teeth in a grimace. She could feel Yaja approaching a boil, but neither said anything. The taxi rattled down a fairly rural road carved into the cold lava skirts of Vesuvius. The driver, a stout sweating man with a mustache and a touring cap, had picked the women up outside the dig site's wire perimeter. He had informed them in fractured English that they must detour to avoid some kind of traffic lockup on the main road, then lapsed into silence.
"Okay, Yaja. You're actually telling me that if I don't believe aliens are visiting the Earth in flying saucers, then I'm buying into a conspiracy theory?"
"Don't be stupid, Anya. Listen to the words I am saying. The idea that aliens visit Earth is a hoax perpetrated by the government of the United States to keep people in a state of fear, so they will docilely allow themselves to be stripped of their liberties. Do you understand me now?"
Anya turned away, frowning, and pretended to watch a broad-winged hawk out of her left-hand window. She didn't have a response. Considering some of her government's behavior, there wasn't much she would put past them. But Yaja's style of discourse turned every assertion into personal attack, which actually made it harder to agree with her on such occasions when she did say something sensible.
"So, what now?"
"Good question. You've got more experience with the technology than I do. What would you suggest?"
"Hello? Do you think this is place to be discussing this? How stupid."
"Listen, I'm getting tired of hearing that out of you all the time."
"Then quit being so stupid!"
So far, Anya had determined that the only way to keep the girl in control was to exert a tyrannical rule over her every move. Her greatest weapon, she had quickly realized, was Yaja's unexpressed but obvious fear that Anya might simply abandon her. Anya knew that was the one thing she couldn't do, but it didn't stop her from exploiting Yaja's fear, and feeling both superior and guilty because of it. The driver suddenly slammed the cab to a stop in the middle of the single-lane road. A green slope fell away down to a rocky-bottomed valley to their left, and a 4-foot granite wall held up a hillside covered with chunks of red and black lava rock to the right.
"Why are you stopping here?"
He turned around and shoved a black Beretta in her face. Anya felt a rush of hot air on her right hand and cheek as the cab's door was yanked open. Knowing that time was short, she flashed her right hand out like a striking adder. She seized the cabbie's gun hand and twisted it inward against its wrist to point the Beretta at the windshield. The sudden thunder of the misaimed shot startled the cabbie so much he dropped the handgun. It rolled into the footwell and out of reach.
Anya, help me!
Turning her attention back towards Yaja, Anya was confronted with the sight of two men clad in balaclavas dragging the girl from the cab. A third, with some kind of submachine gun slung mostly out of sight behind his back, leaned in to seize the bag with the scrolls. His hand was fumbling with the strap, but he was unable to get a good grip on it. She couldn't be certain what the man's ethnicity was, but she could tell he wasn't Italian. Yet again, they were being accosted by multinational Eurotrash goons. Shaping her free hand into a spear with her long fingers extended straight out, she leaned across the seat and jabbed the man directly in the eye. Stunned by the piercing blow, he stumbled back from the car, hauling on the strap of his weapon, but failing to secure the scrolls. Letting go of the cab driver's wrist, Anya seized the collar of his jacket and flung him forward over his steering wheel. Into the windscreen, already cracked and weakened by the bullet. He slumped motionless across the wheel. Red stained the snaggle-toothed fringes of the hole he had made. Anya dove over the seats. For a heart-stopping moment, he fumbled around, blinded by the sunlight streaming in the open door. At last, her hand closed around the black rubber grips of the driver's fallen Beretta. She flopped onto the back seat with her back against the left-hand door and brought the pistol up one-handed. The man Anya had knocked back from the vehicle regained his composure and turned to face her, his hands tightly clutching the fore and aft pistol grips of a Beretta submachine gun. As the barrel rose to blast her, she made her eyes focus on the foresight of her own weapon. She pointed it at the center of the dark silhouette against the brilliant Mediterranean sunlight and squeezed the trigger. The man jerked with the impacts on his body armor, but did not go down. Anya's left hand found her right and wrapped around the fingers to steady her Beretta in an improvised firing position. The Beretta bucked in Anya's hand. The man dropped instantly. The impact of bullets from one of the remaining assailants shook the cab violently. Somebody outside her field of vision was conducting reconnaissance by fire on the cab. From her vantage point, slumped in the wheelbase of the front seat, Anya spotted Yaja being dragged up the slope, though she wasn't being taken peacefully. Anya saw the blonde girl catch the man on her right with a brutal kick to his shin. The kick wasn't sufficient to pop the knee, and he retaliated with a savage backhand. Anya was out of time, with no way to help her charge. She twisted in the seat and kicked at her door full force with both legs. The force of Anya's blow knocked the door clean from the car. She dove from the car as the bullet stitched the seat behind her. Emerging in the noonday sun, she registered two more attackers not 20 feet downslope. They aimed machine pistols at her but didn't fire. The sight of the rear left door exploding clean off the taxicab had momentarily paralyzed both of them. Unfortunately, Anya's forward momentum was not going to let her get a clear shot at them. She opened her hand and let the Beretta fall. As she tucked her head and shoulder for a forward roll, she half-closed her hand and reached with her mind. She took the first fall on her left shoulder and rolled through. Anya came up into a standing attack position, clutching the hilt of the magical sword she had drawn from the otherwhere. The sword that had once belonged to Joan of Arc now belonged to her, and though it rested in some other reality that she couldn't truly understand, she could summon it at will and was growing more confident in using it with each crisis she faced. The mystic blade caught the first gunman at the waist. When it struck his spine, she finally felt a jar of resistance. The second attacker had wits enough about him to turn toward her, but not quickly enough. She brought the sword around and over her right shoulder just as the masked gunman raised his weapon. She cut him transversely from the right down to left. Apparently expecting little resistance from a pair of pampered young middle-class women, these two assassins evidently hadn't bothered with hot, cumbersome body armor. It was a big mistake. Anya almost wanted to ignore the sound of the chopper that was approaching her position, but in rural Italy, she knew it couldn't be a coincidence. The helicopter swooping down was blue with white trim, and it lashed Anya with a horizontal storm of grit and debris. It settled down on a precarious flat spot about 50 yards up the slope above the road. The two surviving masked men dragged Yaja, still kicking violently, toward it. Anya could barely see the pigtailed blonde girl in the dust storm created by the rotors, but she couldn't help but feel a surge of admiration. She wasn't fighting effectually, but by God, she was fighting. One of her abductors swung up an Uzi one-handed and let off a burst at Anya, sending her scrambling uphill for the dubious shelter of the shot-up car. She headed for the front, where the engine block could most reliably be counted on to stop the fast-jacketed 9mm bullets. Peeking over the hood, Anya caught sight of the helicopter as it rose against the great gray mound of Vesuvius. She managed one last glimpse of Yaja as the girl struggled against various sets of restraining arms in the helicopter's open doorway. The driver's Beretta still lay where Anya had dropped it just a few feet away. Rushing over, she seized it and bounded up the slope like a deer, holding the handgun stretched out in front of her. She pointed the Beretta at the streamlined hump on the aircraft's back from which the rotor shaft sprang. Knowing that that was the weakness of any helicopter, she was confident that she could put the bird down with just one or two well-placed shots. Using every ounce of self-control instilled in her over the years, Anya Creed lowered the Beretta to the side. It would be impossible to disable the aircraft without Yaja facing near certain death. Like a dream, the young girl's bright blue eyes flashed in Anya's head. She may have been crass, but she was as innocent as a person could be. As the chopper retracted its landing gear and soared northwest into the stunning blue sky, Anya Creed had no option but to track down Yaja and rescue her from harm.
Rogue Angel is continued on the next CD.